Hi, and welcome back to Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. My name is Mark Pattison, former NFL player, now climbing the seven summits, and welcome to another amazing podcast. Love this quote from one of my favorite basketball players of all time, Larry Bird. A winner is someone who recognizes his God-given talents, works his tail off to develop them into skills, and uses these skills to accomplish his goals. I think this week's guest, Trent Dilfer, former NFL quarterback, 14 years, a Pro Bowler, played in the Super Bowl, won, just an incredible dude. Loved having this conversation with Trent. He is now taking over a high school football program down in Nashville, Tennessee. And we went through that. It was great about this convo that we really didn't talk anything about his 14-year NFL career. We really focused on family, on life, on values of getting off the sidelines and back into the lane of life. And that's what he has done. And he really has come to inspire a lot of people. He is one of the original guys at Elite 11, which is the quarterback camps for kind of like an American Idol, if you want to see it that way. Of bringing in top guys around the country, and then ultimately they find the top 11, and he's seen a lot of amazing players go through. We also talk and spend some time about his family. He had a tragic incident with his son, 5.5 years old, died. Took him 40 days. They discovered this, and he had a problem with his heart, and gosh, tough. But he was brave and talking about it, and then we went on to a number of other things that he's doing. But the bottom line, he's really inspiring a lot of these kids and giving back now of all this amazing information that has gone into his head over all these years. So I've just really appreciated that conversation, and I think you're going to enjoy it too. So stand by for that. And also want to let everybody know about my e-learning course called Finding Your Summit, go figure, which is located on my website at www.markpattisonnfl.com. I've got my public speaking going on over there, as well as my training as I get closer and closer towards my ultimate and final goal of climbing the seven summits with Mount Everest coming up next April. Okay, so check that out. And if you haven't already done so, please go on to iTunes and rate and review. It really does help create more awareness in the Apple world as sharing stories of people doing amazing things like Trent inspires us all. And by the way, this podcast is sponsored by violetsareblueskincare.com with Cynthia Besteman. She is a rock star, and she's overcome her own stuff, and she was on an earlier pod, but love having her and her products represented on this podcast. Okay, so on that note, let's go listen to Trent. Here we go. Hey, everybody, it's Mark Pattison back again with another incredible episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And this week, I am so jacked up to have this particular guy, 14-year NFL vet, ESPN analyst, and now high school football coach, Trent Dilfer, to the pod. Trent, how you doing?
Doing good, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Hey, listen, I'm jacked up and everything else, and actually I am, and for many different reasons. I'm born and raised in Seattle. I was a Washington Husky. You spent some time up in Seattle, and then, you know, I was going through your career, and I knew it from a distance. We have a number of friends in common, Hugh Millen, Jim Mora, Yogi Roth, and others. But the thing that struck me as I'm looking back through your career is you've done all this amazing stuff, and then all of a sudden something that jumps off the page, and actually jumped off the page about a month ago, because as you know, we are both in the club, that is the NFLPA, and with that we get a newsletter once a week full of inspiration and what guys are doing, and they have this feature on you. And I was like, you know what, I've got to have Trent on the pod. And of all places, you are now residing in Nashville, Tennessee. You're in the governor's lounge as we speak. It looks like you've moved up the food chain, and you're coaching high school football. So I'm going to jump all over the pod a little bit, just because your life does have a lot of different things to it and elements to it, a little bit like Forrest Gump, lots of chocolates in that box. And this is another fascinating one. So tell me, what were you thinking moving from Austin, Texas, all the way down to Nashville to take on a new challenge for you?
Well, I was never thinking about it, to be honest with you, Mark. I had turned down probably 10 different coaching opportunities through the NFL and college football, and never really wanted to do it because I had daughters. That was the main thing, is having three girls and following their athletic careers and all the things that they do, wanting to be a good husband, wanting to be a good father, and knowing that that wouldn't mesh well with being a coach.
Yep.
But about October of this last year, I was at church on a Sunday, and I could really sense a deep longing for something more. I knew that even though I was retired and I kind of had the life that every man thinks they want, retire at 47 and play golf five times a week and travel around the country and do cool stuff on TV, I just didn't feel like I was fulfilling my purpose. I felt like there was something missing.
Yeah.
And it was that day I just kind of told God, I said, whatever you bring to my table next, the answer is yes. I'm done saying no to whatever it is. I didn't know what that would look like. My wife and I talked about it. I talked about it with my girls. I just said, I feel like some big transition is coming at some point. I was negotiating actually with a network to maybe do a longer term TV deal, maybe a creative documentary series. You know, I had some things and irons in the fire, so to speak, but none of them felt right. I had some business ventures that I'm excited about, but they weren't full-time jobs. And my middle daughter had just transferred from TCU to go play volleyball at Louisville, and I was bringing her car over Christmas break from Austin to Louisville, and I knew I had to stop off in Nashville to see some friends. And on the course of this trip, I got some weird calls asking if I'd be interested in looking at this Lipscomb Academy high school coaching job, and I kind of laughed at it at first, and then I got excited to hook up some of my friends. I got a coaching network around the country through Elite 11 and the opening, and there's guys that are primed to be head coaches. So I start bragging about them and trying to get them the job. And next thing you know, a week later, I'm actually really considering it. And I thought it was crazy at the time, but I went back to that October day, that October Sunday, when I said I was done saying no to opportunities where they look career opportunities. This is definitely a calling, a purpose thing, not necessarily a career accelerator.
Yeah, no, for sure. So having walked in similar shoes as yourself to a certain point, you were a 14-year NFL player. You played in the Super Bowl. You're a Pro Bowl player, very prolific, threw for over 20,000 yards. I was a receiver, so I would have been on the other end of that. I do wish I would have played with you. I think we'd have made a great combination. But the one thing that can be very stressful, because you did play for Tampa Bay, the Ravens, the Seahawks, the Browns, the 49ers. Now you're originally from, I think, from that Fresno area, or certainly on the West Coast. And now every single time you move, it's a transition and it's stressful. And what people don't understand when they open up D10 of the sports page and under transactions is that they say, hey, it looks like Trent just went to the Seahawks. And it's just so much more than that, because there's friends that you're leaving behind, and there's family, and there's bills, and there's your car payment, and there's things like that, that, you know, how do you like get the, all these things from here to there? So now you end up in Austin, right? And you're talking about this life change, but a lot of that too is about nesting in a certain spot and really getting comfortable in that neighborhood. And when you pick up and go to a whole new town for you, I think Nashville, was that where are your girls now moved on enough in their life cycle out of high school into college where that wasn't so much a tie? Because I know consistency for kids is everything.
Yeah, so a lot of stuff to unpack there. I think number one, you're so right that we want to be comfortable. I think we build our lives around trying to find more comfortable situations. What I have found is that nothing really good comes out of being comfortable.
Yeah,
I found that all the great things our family has done, anything good that I've done, has been at the edge of uncomfortable. And I've been preaching this for years. The edge of uncomfortable is where you find greatness.
Yeah.
And I had gotten too comfortable. I mean, I was retired at 47. I never worked another day in my life, and had chosen Austin because we had cool friends and it's a great hip town to live in. And I could do all the things that retired people do and get around the country to do my other things easily. But I just wasn't doing anything great. My wife actually told me that. My wife sat me down. We were talking about this. She goes, listen, she goes, it's a little more harsh than this, but she goes, we haven't done anything great for 10 years since you retired. Like, yeah, there's nothing that's, besides our kids, we haven't had impact. Let's go do something where we can have impact, where you can utilize your gifts. Now, getting back to what you're talking about, the girls, my oldest is 23. She's a grad student. She plays beach volleyball for Pepperdine. She has a job. She's hopefully going to get married here pretty soon. So that wasn't a concern. My middle daughter is a Louisville. She's very accomplished volleyball player. I'll miss some of her stuff, but I'll still be able to see some of it too. And thanks to technology and the ACC network and all that, I'll be able to watch her play on TV. And then really came down to my youngest daughter, who had come to Austin on a whim from California and really trusted us to move her there after her freshman year. She's thrived. She's loved Austin. It's been great for her. She's the one that looked at me, and I might get choked up, or she's the one that looked at me. I thought she was going to shut down this thing for sure. And she said, Dad, she goes, I'll be disappointed if you don't do it. Those boys need what you've given us girls, and we'll make it work. We'll figure it out, is what she said. And it's been hard. I've been gone for 75 days now from them. They're still in Austin. I'm in Nashville. She's going to finish her senior year. She's only a junior right now. She's going to finish her senior year in Austin. So there's some challenges. But what we're learning is that for the first time in 10 years, we all feel really alive. Yeah. And we all feel that we're within our purpose, we're serving our purpose, that this was a calling. And that really good things are happening. They're happy. Good things are happening in this community. Good things are happening with our squad. Good things are happening in our family. And those good things are happening because we're uncomfortable. So we're a little more dependent upon one another. We're a little more edgy in a good way, a little more motivated, a little more intentional, a little more authentic. Like, all these things are happening within our family and in our lives that has been good on the work end, the calling end, and it's been really good on the family end. And I would challenge people, because I fell victim to this. I would never challenge people if I didn't do this myself. Take inventory every year. Are you too comfortable? Because if you're too comfortable, you're probably not having impact. And we were designed to have impact, not to be comfortable.
Yeah. You know, I love everything that just came out of your mouth, because there's a lot of just fantastic points in there. And I want to go back, and you just said unpack some things. So now I want to unpack you. And one of the things that you talked about is they're really the unselfishness of your daughter really encouraging you to go and challenge yourself, and probably seeing you in a lull, even though you guys have a very comfortable lifestyle, but not really giving that gift back to everybody else that really needs to receive it, in the way that you've been able to part all these gifts, this football journey, this train that you've been on, all these different amazing players, Matt Hasselbeck, and I could go down the list. I mean, I'm sure there's hundreds of guys that you had the great fortune of playing with, but also learning from, right? In what each guy brings to the table in their own little unique way. My best friend is Jim Mora, and he went through something very similar years ago when he was living up in Seattle, and his son was a senior in high school. And so same type of decision, where he ended up moving down to UCLA, taking that head coaching job. And then his son finished out his senior year. It is a very unselfish thing for everybody in the family to do, and really support each person's individual quest within that family. So that was incredible. I also got to be, I was served in a mentorship program for UCLA. And so just being around those kids, not the type of thing that you're doing right now where you're there day to day, but I was literally at every game, every road trip, on the bus, talking to kids like you. I happen to be in that position where most of those kids on that team wanted to go down the same path that I had been, which is from college to the NFL and then ultimately into business. So what that transition was like. And then finally, you know, you start talking about purpose, and purpose is something that's a really deep and meaningful word to me. I have never been, well, let me go back. First of all, I didn't have a 14-year career. I had a 5. Two, I played in an era, I was about 10 years before you. And so You probably see this a lot from the standpoint of a lot of the guys that are the pre-93ers or whatever they call them, that haven't realized some of the benefits that the older guys later who came along. I mean, I was out there with a picket, you know, back in 1987, walking around the block asking the question, so why am I doing this? Why am I on strike? I just want to play football. That's all I want to do. And so my life has turned kind of upside down about 7 years ago by, you know, going back into the mountains and trying to become the first NFL player to climb the 7 summits. But along with that, I've started this podcast from our mutual friend, Yogi Roth. He encouraged me to do this. And the amount of people that I've got responses back for the conversations I'm having, it's not about me, but having that platform to go back and have a conversation with guys like you, and guys with no arms, no legs, that are blind, and just the inspiration about what really drives them and what has got them kind of over that hump into that next level. And that all kind of circles back in that word called being purposeful and authentic.
You're so right. And you know, for me, I think there's some, what we call like big rocks in your life, like the things that they're non-negotiables, the pillars of your life. My faith is obviously the number one thing, but I think as I've gone on this journey, and we won't get to all of it, but just this extreme highs in my life journey and extreme lows. What I always ask myself is, am I self-aware enough to look in the mirror every day and say, okay, what am I learning from this? What trajectory is my life on? And then make adjustments and then hopefully share that. Not tell people what to do. I try really hard not to tell people how to live their life, but to tell people, hey, this is how my journey's gone. Here's some lessons learned. Here's been a lot of mistakes I've made. Here's how I've corrected them. Here's who I've leaned on as I've tried to correct them. And here's some things that I've been fortunate enough to do well. And here's some principles behind how I did that well. So I agree. I mean, you know, I think what happens too often, and this has happened to me in the last handful of years, is when you stop listening to that internal voice, when you turn that internal voice off and just say, no, I don't really want to hear from you right now. I kind of like what's going on. I'm comfortable. I don't want a lot of change. And when you stop listening to that internal voice, and we all have it. Some of us choose to listen to it in seasons of life, and some of us choose not to listen to it in seasons of life. And I have found that the more I listen to that internal voice, the more I let other people speak into my life and hold me accountable, the more I challenge myself, the better, the more productive, the more impactful, the more passionate I am about life.
Well, you know this from playing your playing days, and I think football is so metaphorical in terms of the life journey. And that there isn't anything that when I grinded, I mean, you were a number one draft pick. I was number seven. Okay. So it doesn't really matter because you're still on that same journey to be the best you can possibly be. And you're right. You go through ups and you go through downs, and there's nothing that you ever truly, I think, grateful for and looking back on life and just really feeling that sense of accomplishment that you didn't truly have to work for. Right. And it's all the thing. It's not so much about me standing on top of Everest, you know, and that's like the highlight film or you in the Super Bowl or something. It's all those little mini moments that happen. And there's a certain attributes that lead toward that successful venture and that pattern that you start to go towards. So anyways, the net is I agree with you and everybody should be out there challenging themselves. And you know, this podcast is called Finding Your Summit, and it really should be called Finding Your Summits, because I think we go through multiple periods in our life where it's just that phase of what we're trying to do. And it looks like you're en route to that next mountaintop. And as you challenge yourself towards, I mean, you guys haven't even kicked off yet. You probably had a spring ball, right? So you're still getting all the pieces.
I haven't been in pads yet. We're still in t-shirts and in the weight room.
Yeah. So right now you're all world, right? I mean, things haven't kicked off, and you know the way things are going to go. There's going to be great times and there's going to be challenging times, and that's really sticking together in those principles that you really plant and those seeds grow with those kids that are going to create a successful program. So let me transition a little bit here, because I think there's a subject that I asked you about earlier, and that is your son, Trevin. And I'll just give this the quick setup. And the thing that I'm so impressed with, and I'll share a similar story with you, and at the end of the day, you know, it's the parent heartbreak. And you went through every parent's worst nightmare, which is you do have three daughters. You had one son. And he came down with heart disease, and after 40 days, he passed away. And I can't imagine what that would be like for any parent. And so we talked about, and you've been talking about, you know, these kind of ups and downs, and had tremendous highs and tremendous lows. And obviously, that must have been one of those ones that tops out. But tell me about how your faith and your connection with your family, your three daughters, I know most of them were fairly young at the time, and certainly your wife, really helped to power you through that awful moment.
Well, I mean, it's, you're right. It's every parent's worst nightmare. I can't think of a worse low to go through. Every possible bad emotion hits you at once. I think the Reader's Digest version of it is that when you are broken, when you feel like literally you are desperate and hanging by a thread, what do you turn to? And everybody that goes through this is faced with this one question: is what am I turning to for strength, for endurance, for hope? When you lose a child who's 5.5 years old, he's your second child, and you have these three other kids that you know are going to be impacted from it. And for us, it's our faith, and it's the fact that God chose to allow his son to do the same thing, and that there's a promise of something greater than what we're living right now for those of us who believe in him. So for me, it was that. And for our whole family, it was the hope of seeing him again one day. It was the hope that this is a temporary residence, or the understanding of this is a temporary residence. It's a piece that transcends understanding. Those things are not esoteric mumbo jumbo. Those are real. When I share my faith, I don't pound somebody over the head with the Bible. I don't give them a track. I tell them, listen, I've experienced this. I've experienced a supernatural healing peace, and it's available to anyone. So that's where I went. I didn't have another choice. I don't know how people do it without faith. There was a point when I was a few months after, I was 268 pounds. I was massively depressed, and God used people. God used circumstances like Matt Hasselbeck and Seattle Seahawks organization to help heal me, and the community of friends and teammates and everybody that came alongside of us through that time was amazing. To this day, like, you don't ever get over it, right? You're never, it's less pain on a daily basis.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily get over it. We still have these incredible people in our life that were there with us then and are still with us now. And we find comfort in them, but ultimately it's not on human understanding. It's not something you can figure out how to get through. It is a supernatural thing. And that's what we leaned on. And that's where our peace comes from.
When you look back on it, and there may not be an answer here, and that's totally fine and acceptable. What did Trevin, even though 5.5 years old, what's the greatest lesson he taught you?
It's a great question. And I actually do have an answer. He was a peacemaker. Trevin was the second child. His sister, Maddie, who's 23 now, was 7. And his other sister, Tori, was 3-ish. I don't remember exactly how old. And
yeah.
he was the one that with any dynamic in the family that wasn't going well, when there's just chaos, anybody that has 7, 5, 3 and newborn knows there's chaos. When you have a highly competitive mom and dad, that there's going to be chaos. There's going to be conflict. There's going to be challenges there. And he was the ultimate peacemaker. He'd be the one that would run into his older sister's room and make sure she was okay, and then run into his little sister's room and make sure it was okay, or come be with mom and give her a hug when she was struggling. If dad had been grumpy at dinner or something, and he'd come to me and make sure I was okay. And he just had such a deep concern for everybody else and how they were doing, and to make sure there was peace in the household. And I've learned a lot from that, because I can tend to be a bulldozer at times. I've had somebody tell me that I'm a bull in a china shop and the china is always rattling. I don't necessarily take any plates, but it's always rattling. And I that's probably true. But I've learned in my life that to learn how to handle conflict better, learn how to be a better peacemaker, to learn really put myself in other people's shoes. It's helped in this coaching role, especially because these kids would do whatever I told them to do if I didn't give them the why. But sure, I think I've earned their trust by not doing that, by trying to put myself in their shoes and understand that, you know, they're going through an awkward time. Life is like, and appreciate what they're going through and have a authentic relationship with them. So when there is conflict, we know how to create a peaceful solution and hopefully get the most out of them by doing it that way.
Hey, this pod is sponsored by Laird Superfoods. So many products to choose from your InstaFuel, your coffee, your tea, your smoothies. And I love the Superfood Creamer and use the hydration powders like the beets, the coconut, the matcha, the turmeric to mix all into my 7 Summit Smoothie. And it's so good. Log on to LairdSuperfood.com and get your 20% off when you use the code MarkP20, okay? So get your Laird Superfood, and I guarantee it will help fuel your journey.
Yeah, so I also have two daughters, and one of the things that it took me probably 50 years to figure this whole thing out, but you know, I used to tell people I am a different person than I was when I was playing. And part of that is because from the time that from my high school and the college at the University of Washington under Don James, and then into the NFL, I played for the Raiders. That's where I was drafted. I mean, you're running around with a pack of wolves. And, you know, I just wasn't as developed as I am today. And I think my daughters have really helped me in that journey to help be more authentic and vulnerable and compassionate about life and about, you know, the direction that I've had to go with my ups and downs. I've got an interesting question, although it's interesting to me. So let me give you the setup here. So you're with the Ravens, you go to the Super Bowl, and now, I mean, unbelievable. You win the Super Bowl, you've got a big fat diamond ring on your finger to show from that, and then you move on to the Seahawks, my hometown team, and there you end up competing with Matt Hasselbeck, who ultimately ended up being there for many, many years and did very well for the Seahawks, took them to the Super Bowl. But there was that competitive edge between the two of you guys, I'm sure, when you first got there, because he doesn't want to lose his job, and then you take it, and you guys were back and forth and this and that. But a lot of times that can create a lot of friction. And now what we're talking about right now, what you talked about, is he's one of the guys who really stepped in and helped you through this difficult moment. So what was that transition for you when you and Matt became competitors to really close friends and teammates, and now an ally to help you get through this toughest moment of your entire life?
Yeah, well, it again, long story, but I think I earned Matt's trust that first year, and he was skeptical of me, but by being authentic, by being real with him, by coming off winning a Super Bowl, going and being a quote-unquote backup to a guy that's never played a real snap in the NFL, was hard for me, but yet I wanted to serve him that way, because Mike Holmgren had made it clear that my role was to help get the most out of him early on and still compete and still try to be the best I could be. But in that particular season of my career, the role was to back him up. And I did that very well. Now, he didn't play very well, and I did in those games that I played in. And then the next year I won the job and I got the big contract. And then I tore my Achilles tendon, and then he got the job back. Yeah. And, you know, there's that ebb and flows. But through it all, I think that authenticity, I keep using that word, but that realness with one another really developed a close bond. And our wives became very close friends. They're still very close to this day. And when you go through hard things with people and you handle it well, that doesn't mean it's singing kumbaya and everybody's happy all the time. There's some really hard conversations that Matthew and I have had over the years. There we fought. We disagree. We, to this day, disagree on things often. But we agree that we're never going to let those things get in the way of a really, really special friendship. And there's a respect for one another and an admiration for one another. He admires how I live my life and how I've raised my kids. And I've walked through 25 years with my wife and our journey. And there's things about his life that I really respect and honor, I mean, and appreciate and admire about him. So it's been a great friendship. It started with hard stuff. It started with a very, very, not just intense rivalry, but an economic situation too. And people go, oh yeah, you're just battling for a position. No, we weren't. We're battling for like $20 million.
Yeah.
So chew on that one, skeptical people. This is about a $20 million battle that we were having, because somebody was going to get that money.
Yeah.
And to be able to find that avenue of where you could put it in buckets. Okay, I'm still trying to win the battle every day, but I'm not going to let it get in the way of something deeper, which is our relationship.
Well, that takes maturity too, right? And I know that back in when I was playing, I always looked at it as today it's like a modern day American Idol, right? Where every single week people go out there and they're fighting. They're, I mean, literally fighting, which people don't quite understand. I'm like, now they have the cameras that show up and they show, hey, so-and-so had a fight with this guy. I was like, big deal. I mean, this happened every day, and they make it into like, it was some big controversy and people blow it off and off you go. but it's emotionally, physically, mentally draining on the soul. And so to come back and then those guys that you're competing against, you can leave everything on the field and come together and know that you're there for a common cause, even though there's some big bank on the table. It just, again, I think it takes some maturity and some leadership too amongst, you know, those guys that you're playing with. And Matt, I don't know him well at all. I met him through Jim Mora, but just seems like a total solid guy, you know, from the East Coast, the whole family. And I have a friendship like that with Hugh Millen. We weren't competing because he's a fellow quarterback like yourself, but just in terms of a guy that we've gone through a lot of battles together and being able to share those different things. And I think probably the biggest point here for me is to anybody who's listening to this pod is when tough times come up, I go to the pain. I go to those people. I don't shy away. And a lot of times people like, God, I don't know what to say. And I, you know, and so they don't say anything. And I think that's the worst thing anybody can do.
Yeah. I mean, life wasn't meant to be lived by ourselves in a hole. It was meant to be with others through relationship. And a word that's been hitting me the last few years in a deep way is connection.
Yeah. Love that.
Friendships more than relationships of truly connecting with people. And there's tremendous value in that. It makes life so much richer. It allows you to walk in another word I've been wrestling with a lot and thinking about is this idea of tribe. When you can really create a tribe, those usually are created with connections, not just with token relationships. So you're absolutely right. Like it's finding your summit or summits, as you said. Those journeys were meant to be done with other people through connection.
Well, let me just go one layer deeper on the tribe thought. And that is, and again, I didn't quite figure this out, but the more I've been able to open up and share about my struggles and everything, those people that return that favor and share where they're coming from, those relationships are so much deeper and really peeling back the onion and really getting to the core thing. How are you doing? Great. How are you doing? Great. Well, okay, great. And you go in different directions. And, you know, it's just that doesn't foster those types of relationships that really build that community and that tribe that you're talking about. So I appreciate it. All right. So I want to transition again. Another common friend that we have, Andy Bark. And I would love to understand how you came to be really the main guy in terms of football guy for Elite 11, which are essentially another American Idol type mm-hmm. competition where you're bringing in the top quarterbacks around the country and they compete and ultimately you guys crown certain guys. And that really has a lot to do with where they go in college. And it's, it lends a lot of credibility.
So 20 years ago, Andy and Bob Johnson, famous high school coach at Mission Viejo, started this Elite 11 camp. And the idea of it was give every kid a chance around the country to try out to be trained by elite coaches and be around elite level football and kind of give them a graduate level understanding of the game and exposure. And it was wildly successful. It was best in class before I ever touched it. But it was just definitely transitioning. Andy had sold the brand to ESPN and they were looking to take it to a whole new level, a television show, which it's been, and really not just make it more glamorous, but serve more people, serve more kids, cast the net wider. And I know they talked to John Gruden, they talked to me, they talked to a couple other people in the quarterback space, and Andy just felt that I was the guy for it, that I had the leadership qualities for it, that I had the passion for it, and the vision to really see that it was a camp. But really what it needed to become was what I call a cult, meaning having a cult following where everybody was really invested into what was going. And then ultimately a community where the community of quarterbacks from the youngest ages all the way to the pros can kind of come together and understand that the quarterback journey is a unique journey. It's very different than most position, every other position. It's very much the journey of a CEO. Or a president of a university, or somebody that has a great burden on them of leadership. Build that community up and let people kind of have a behind the veil look at what that journey looks like. So we dove both feet in 10 years ago now, And it's been, outside of this job that I have right now, it's been the most rewarding thing I've done in sport, building the coaching staff. That's truly a tribe. This Elite 11 coaching staff is truly a tribe. They're like sons to me, and it continues to grow. The opportunity to mentor them and then watch them go and launch their personal businesses that have come from this and serve so many kids around the country. I mean, to get Jordan Palmer when he was young and didn't really know much, and now watching him have huge influence in the quarterback space. Quincy Avery out of Atlanta, who spent the night in his car with $18 in his wallet in Columbus, Ohio, to be able to coach for me, and now thriving. Deshaun Watson and many other pros, guys, you know, guys that maybe don't have the same level of national gravitas, but have the same impact on a lot of young people's lives. And I think the neatest thing about Elite 11 is going to be, we're going to look back in 20, 30 years, and it's not going to be the amount of NFL quarterbacks. It's going to be the amount of school board presidents and lawyers and fire chiefs and police officers and great dads and difference makers in the community, because they took a more holistic look at their quarterback journey and all the lessons it taught them. And it's going to allow them that massive impact in the world we live in for the better. And that's the main purpose of Elite 11. Now, do we want them to go to the NFL? Heck yeah. And we have a massive success rate of our guys going and playing on Sundays, and our guys go and become starters in Power 5 programs. But that ends one day. And the life after that, as you understand, as I understand, is way bigger than that short period of your life where you're a football player. And we really want to impact them at this age, because they're very moldable and shapeable right now. And we get them, and we show them a life that's bigger than just completing passes and ripping dimes for touchdowns and being on Instagram and Twitter and TV. No, there's nothing wrong with any of that. Wow, that stuff's really cool. I'm building to being there the first time your wife delivers your first child, or a high school graduation, or a college graduation, as I've been through. I mean, those are a marriage. Those are seminal moments that trump any football experience 1,000x, and we want these kids to be ready for those in a better way.
Yeah, I mean, certainly easy to say, you know, when you're looking up and you want all those things because you're a kid and you're going through all the emotions and the hormones bouncing around your body, you know, like anybody. But, you know, you look back with perspective when you're older, and you suddenly you become much more wise because you've actually experienced all these things. So it's really cool that you and Yogi and a bunch of other guys can really deliver those mentors and that mentorship to those kids. Who is the one example of the kid that came in as Build and has gone on to great success
on the football field?
Yep. Through this Elite 11.
Jared Goff is probably the first one that comes to mind. You know, I remember seeing him in his first regional in Northern California, and I called him chicken legs the whole day and told him he needed to live in the weight room because he was too skinny. And, you know, just watching him, you could see his competitive temperament back then. You could see all the qualities that if he developed physically, he was going to be a big time player. And then to kind of take a chance on him, because we were taking a chance on him, but we saw something more than just the athletic traits. We saw something inside of him that was going to make him special. And it's proven to be true. Sam Darnold's another one.
Yep.
We found him off high school basketball tape because he didn't have junior film as a quarterback because he had a broken ankle. And to see him cross a dude over playing point guard or bang down in the post with a 6'8 guy or, you know, diving in the stands for a ball or whatever it was, you could see the competitive temperament in him as well. Then you get to know him, and you get to see the type of leader he is, and his family structure and how he viewed his life's lens, and you know that he's going to be special. So to find these kids that weren't super hyped up at the time, we found a lot of, at the time, 2- and 3-star kids that now once we take them, they become 4- and 5-star kids. So the recruiting people kind of try to catch up. But we've taken a lot of chances on kids that have proven to be great players, great people. And again, we'll have long NFL careers and make millions and millions of dollars, but we'll also be prepared to, after football, have an impact in our world.
you know, you're very fortunate because you have that direct impact with all these kids, and you're certainly between what you're doing right now with high school and then also with the Elite 11. One of the kids that I've been around is Hugh Millen's kid, Kale. And so, as you know, that he went through the same process, and I was getting every other day from Hugh in terms of what's going on, how do you see it, and all this kind of stuff. And ultimately, he ended up going to the University of Oregon. They had a tremendous recruiting class, and I think he's got all the goodies to be a great quarterback someday. He understands humility. He's smart. He's accurate. And just like a lot of guys, they just have to sit and wait their turn, you know, and develop mentally, emotionally, physically.
Well, he's tough physically and mentally, like you said. He's got the competitive pedigree, so he knows how to play the long game. You know what I mean? He knows how to endure. He's got grit. He's obviously physically gifted, but he's got a really good football mind. So Kale's got everything it takes to be really successful. Another one of those kids that being around him for just a day, the first day of the 5 days I was with him in the summer, you could tell there's just something different inside. And that difference is a good thing. So it's just really neat to be able to see him at this age and watch their journey. I mean, my favorite day of the week is Saturdays because I get to see 50-ish high school quarterbacks that I've gotten to know and train and be around and mentor play on Saturdays. And then Sundays, now there's 10 of them playing on Sundays. So people always ask me who my favorite football team is. And I say, I don't have a favorite football team. I have favorite players. And I have 7 TVs on Sunday because I'm trying to watch 7 different quarterbacks, not necessarily the team.
Well, that probably goes back to your ESPN days, which you were there for 9 years. Did you enjoy that? Or again, does it circle back to what you were just talking about in terms of, and I think this is what Jim Mora goes through a little bit, who's at ESPN right now, just that while it's great and it's awesome to sit there on a Saturday or Sunday and watch 20 games going on at one time, it's not impactful like what you're reaching today.
So yes, I enjoyed it a lot early on. It's a great life. You still can be back with your family midweek and get to see them do all the things that you want to see them do. You get to stay involved in the game. And I really liked it before it became debate TV. I really enjoyed teaching the game of football through linear television. To be able to get there and have a Monday night football seat pregame of a big game and be able to help the mom who's cooking dinner, who's watching the pregame show because her two boys are on the couch, her husband's on the couch, so she's forced to watch it, be able to teach her something to watch for that game so she could better communicate with her sons. I can't tell you how many times in my career on TV I'd be in an airport and a mom would come up to me and thank me for teaching her football better communicate love in the car. Things like that. I love that part of it. And then I don't know, it's maybe 4 or 5 years ago, this thing shifted to debate TV. Everything had to be big, dramatical conversations. You had to have one side versus the other. It didn't matter if people knew what they were talking about or not. It became about ratings and getting people to watch each other fight. It became CNN and Fox and, you know, all this garbage we watch with the political news. We started having to do that. And once we had to do that, I stopped liking it. I still did it. I tried to stay away from those things. But then it took the joy out of TV when that became the stuff. And unfortunately, people think they're right. There's a lot of people in TV that think that's the right thing to do. I'm not from that camp. Therefore, I got out.
Yeah, I don't know if it's right or wrong, but I do know that you're good at it. And so I do miss you on TV, watching, breaking down games. But, you know, you're moving on to bigger and better. And I know we are kind of doing things a little bit backwards here as we round third base. But I got to ask you, because I was going through this, and, you know, I've got all my sheets, all my notes on you, and it took me hours to, like, write down all these details and everything else. And the one thing that I started with and then I came back and I ended with is you're this guy that had this prolific college career, and you pretty much, I mean, based on what I could see just on paper, gone anywhere, but you end up at Fresno State, right? And I'm not here to knock Fresno State, but having played in the Pac-10, now the Pac-12, and they call the Power Five conferences, you know, SEC, all these different places, what was your choice? What was your reasoning behind going to a smaller school like that?
Wanted to play quarterback, and I was a terrible high school quarterback. I was a very good athlete. I was more of a basketball player. Had some lower level offers as a basketball player, like Santa Clara, St. Mary's, Gonzaga before they were big time, things like that. I was a tweener basketball player. I was a 230-pound, 6'4", 3'4", you know, wing post guy. So I was kind of too short to play down low and too thick to play on the wing. I could score. I was tough, blah, blah, blah. But I was never going to be an impactful college basketball player.
Yeah.
And then football-wise, I was recruited by Washington, Washington State, Oregon, Arizona, and Arizona State, all the Pac-10s as a tight end linebacker. Because my body size, I was a thicker kid. I could run, you know, I was a 4'6" 5" guy at 235 pounds, was strong, physical, liked contact. You know, a son of a football coach. I grew up the son of an offensive line coach. So I understood all the dirty parts of football and enjoyed them, but I was a terrible quarterback, but I wanted to play quarterback. And Fresno came to recruit a kid named Todd Whitehurst, who was a great high school quarterback in our league, much better than me as a quarterback. And they came to recruit him and offer him. And we were playing basketball against each other on a, you know, I think it was an October, I mean, November, December night, early in the season, and I went for 40 on him. And he couldn't score on me. And Rich Olson, a very reputable offense coordinator in Fresno State, the University of Miami for their national championship teams, NFL coach for years, he came down on the court that night and said, I wasn't here to see you, know about you. Actually, you weren't really high on our list, but after what I saw tonight, we want you to come play quarterback. If you can do that, then you can learn how to play quarterback. And he taught me a lot. Then Jeff Tedford came a couple years later and really refined my skill set. And I was Jeff's first round quarterback of the six that he's developed. And I just had great coaching. I really did. That's why I'm passionate about coaching, that between Jim Sweeney, my head coach, Rich Olson, Jeff Tedford, and others, it always takes the village and the coaching staff. They took this big, tough, physical, competitive, raw kid and made me a quarterback.
Well, it normally doesn't happen that way, especially at quarterback. I mean, certainly with other positions.
Not anymore. It's become so much more specialized.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, that's tough. And, you know, I don't know. I'm throwing a stereotype, but you do look like a tight end. But you did well at playing the quarterback position. And I think part of that too, and you mentioned this early in the pod, it's a cerebral experience, I think, in a position where you really have to import that leadership, that knowledge, and then just be an animal about studying all phases of the game and really understanding that film study equates to productivity on the field of really knowing your opponent. And, you know, I know that you were an insane, crazy man that came around putting the time in. And I don't know anything ever great that happened didn't come through hard work. I just don't attribute luck. I mean, you get lucky once in a while. That's usually by putting yourself in the best position to win. And then that preparation meets opportunity, and then some good things can come along. So, listen, I could go on and on and on, like pod two number or phase two.
Of the
pod.
Do this again, because I actually got to go coach some football.
So we didn't even get into football, and that was not my intent today, Trent, because I know that you've been and done many, many of these, and people want to talk about Tampa and the Ravens and the Seahawks and all this other stuff, and that really wasn't my intent today. It was really more to talk to you about the things that you've overcome and what you see in your direction in your life, and really motivate others to go out and really stretch themselves and be uncomfortable and live a purposeful, authentic life. And so to that end, I'm extremely, extremely grateful. I'm glad that we finally made the connection to do this, and just very thankful for you coming on the pod.
Well, thanks for having me, Mark. I appreciate it. And I'll do it again too, and we'll talk about all that other rocky roads of my NFL career. Updates on Lipscomb Academy football. Hopefully they'll be good ones.
Well, we're going to do something called a rewind, which is going back and getting caught up with people like you. And so look forward to doing that with you. And so on that note, very much appreciate it. He is Trent Dilfer. Thank you.
All right.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey.
And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, nfl.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
Hey, thank you so much for dropping in and listening to another amazing episode of Finding Your Summit. Truly incredible people doing spectacular things in life, and I hope you were inspired just like I continue to be. Look, I am super grateful that you came in and subscribed to this pod and would be more than appreciative if you gave the show a ratings and review on iTunes. Trust me, it matters. And then also go share it with your friends, of course. Okay, until next week, go do something great, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.